like what is that you do when you care for other people, and then we can build the conversation from there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is giving you hope when it is coming to addressing and reducing sexual violence generally, but also more specifically intimate partner violence at the post-secondary level, but also how maybe that can be applied to the whole of society and globally, because this isn't just an issue that's been seen in Canada. We're seeing it all over.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you give me hope, for example, because you are hosting and this radio show on this subject. Like, if I think of my mom, right? I don't think that she was able to listen a radio show on this subject, right? Mm. So talking about intimate partner violence, sexualized violence, is what gives me hope. And that I feel that that growing awareness, more young people are talking about it, their willingness to talk about, asking questions, learn a little bit more, read more. This is what gives me hope. Because there are many, many students are stepping up. Many students are thinking of what else can we do, right? Like, let's organize, let's do something together. So then we start to kind of like reducing this impact. And then also, there are so many survivor-led initiatives. I wanted to talk about the Me Too movement. I mean, that's a huge movement that creates a lot of space for people to talk and to share their story, to say, hey, there are more people like me that were impacted and they are going to believe me, right? And then also, I will say, like, we have to listen as an institution. We have to learn how to listen. And then I think that as a result of that, there is this office. And it's not just because of SFU. We know it was... it was, you know, like a policy nationwide that, you know, in all post-secondary institutions, we should have offices like this, right? And then continue maybe the advocacy, continue questioning ourselves, structures or things that we learn by default, like I learned by default heterosexuality, I learned by default monogamy, I learned by default so many things because I never, like, you know. And then later I was like, is this really what I want? Like, questioning, right? So then always asking ourselves, is this the type of relationship that I wanted to build? Because sometimes we just do things by default, right? So I think that that is what gives me hope, because I see zines and I see books and I see articles and even social media influencers, people talking and questioning these who are very young. So then that's really, really hopeful. Yeah,
absolutely. I feel like I have started to see a lot more of my friends sharing stuff on social media now that we've sort of reached the ages of 20, 21, and seeing stuff more in the news, that people are now spreading a lot more awareness of what is going on. But not just like where we are, but also on a global scale, that I feel that there is a lot more being shared about issues that are happening in other countries by, like, my friends back home in England and also friends over here. We're seeing a lot of people sharing stuff about, for example, Palestine and things. So it's nice to see that it's a global thing and it's not just sheltered in what you're seeing in your own country.
And then the interconnection, right? Like, because you always thought that IPV is something from the global south, and we have to demystify that. This intimate partner violence is not something of racialized or marginalized community only, right? Mm-hmm. And then I have to admit, when I came here, I thought, oh, in Canada, there is no such a thing, because you internalize that racism, right? Mm-hmm. And then just to learn, my goodness, it's not about race or countries or... as so many people have said, like, education is nothing to do with that. It's just like there is an issue of power and there is an issue of patriarchy as well. So it's a structure, mm-hmm. right, that crosses all borders and frontiers. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Sort of moving slightly away from looking at intimate partner violence, I know that you have an event coming up for the Red Dress Memorial Day, if you'd like to speak a bit about what the importance of Red Dress Memorial Day is, what it represents to SFU and the Indigenous community. And for people that don't know what it is, where they can find information, when.
Yeah, so Red Dress is going to happen. It's like we're going to have an awareness and like a memorial table and awareness kind of a space. So Red Dress, for the ones that don't know, honors and remember missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. And here at the SFU, our office and the Women's Center decide to lead this memorial or this event as a way to honor, you know, collective grief and visibility of what is happening and continue happening in Canada, and commitment to justice for the Indigenous communities here. I know that, and this is going to happen on May 5th, and it's going to happen in all campuses like Burnaby, Surrey, and Vancouver from 12 to 2 p.m. There will be tables allocated. The one in Burnaby is going to be at the Student Union building, right at the entrance of the building, or at the reception, and then in Surrey will be at the mezzanine, and then at Vancouver it would be at the lobby of Harbour Center. And then it's gonna be kind of like an interactive table. It's not gonna be like an official event, but it's more like a people can come and they can color in some pages, making some pins. They can bring an offering. We are asking people, you can bring like a flower or a little note or a little painting that you create, or a stone, a feather, a herb, just to offer it and put it in the table on behalf or on the name of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit folks who are no longer with us. And then we will have also roses there that if people wanted to take one, we are inviting people to take one and go to the land, to go to a little forest, go to a park and put it there, thinking of all the women that are no longer here with us. And then for those who are not familiar with the Red Dress Day, I understand that it became a symbol through a Métis artist that is called Jamie Black, with the Red Dress Project. And it was like they use empty red dresses hung in public spaces to kind of evoke the presence of the presence and also the absence of those who have been lost, have been murdered, have been missing, and demanding kind of like remembrance and action about what happened. Yeah.
Absolutely. Obviously, with this being related to the murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit people, how can non-Indigenous allies show up to this in a meaningful and respectful way, both at this tabling event and memorial, but also beyond that, in day-to-day life?
Yeah, so I will say this, I hope to see this as a powerful act of solidarity. We, majority of us, we have been uninvited into this land. This absolute is kind of like an epidemic for Indigenous communities here. And I think the way that we can show up is like with respect, like humble, right? Listening with humility what Indigenous people are saying, amplify their voices, learning more about why this is happening. Many of us who maybe moved recently to this land or are international students or something may not know what that means. Challenge racism when you see it, right? Like challenge violence when you see it, in the ways that will make you feel, of course, safe and comfortable. And then thinking about, you know, the actions, like, for example, that day we are asking a question to folks that come to the table, and they can write down like a little note as an answer. And it's like, what will I do to support justice, healing, and Indigenous rights, not just today, but every day after, right? Because this is not just one day to remember. This is an ongoing thing that is happening here in Canada. So I think that will be the best way, you know, coming with humbleness and listening, you know, indigenous communities. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And you speaking towards justice and healing there, what are some of the biggest barriers, do you think, to justice and safety for Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people today in Canada?
Well, I think it's very interwoven with what we were talking about, IPV, like intimate partner violence, and also sexualized violence. One thing that I wanted to acknowledge and mention, and that is important, is that sexualized violence was the first weapon of colonization, and sadly continue being used as a way to kind of use power and oppress other people. So I will say, like, systemic racism is a big thing. There is a lack of police accountability for the issues that have been happening with missing and murdered Indigenous women, Two-Spirit. There is a neglection, right? Like, many times, how many missing and murdered, missing Indigenous women you see, even the post around the city, and it takes so long for police to start investigations, right? So then, and then I also will say, like, there are so many supports that don't receive that much money, that they are kind of like unfunded, that they, you know, we were talking about housing before, right? Housing insecurity, like, there are many folks that live in shelters that, or sometimes don't have even a house or a place to stay. And many families, when you go to the Women's Memorial March on February 13, they mention this over and over and over again. Like, I have been here for 20 years as an uninvited guest. That has not changed, in a sense that the demands continue being the same, and I don't know where the actions are happening. So I think that those are many of the barriers that, you know, Indigenous folks are facing in this land.
Yeah, I think that's a common theme that I know I've spoken about on previous Intravenous episodes. It's that we are having the same discussions and the same topics are being raised over and over and over again, but yet we can talk about them all we want, but if nothing's changing, nothing's changing. There's got to be a reason for that, and they need to be looking at that and seeing why is nothing changing.
I, Rebecca, also wanted to mention something that I forgot to say. Like, many Indigenous people also don't feel safe reporting violence. Like, we were talking about the barriers, right? But we also have to be aware of the identities that cross us and the marginalization of people, right? And for Indigenous people, when we have seen when we report, they report violence, sometimes they ended up being more impacted, right? Mm-hmm. Or they, because of what had happened to them, right? The trust in institutions is really low, right? Because they have not been supported enough, believe enough, respected enough to do this. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. There's been, I can speak from my experience as a woman in the UK, that there has been a lot of trust taken away in women's ability to go to the police. As there was a case, I think it was back in 2021 or 2022, where a woman was kidnapped and murdered by a police officer. And that kind of case there really sparks a thing of like, well, you're an institution that's meant to provide me with support and safety. How could I ever go to you about something as serious as violence, intimate partner violence, anything like that, if there is people there that are very capable of doing exactly what I want to go to you about? Excellent. And I can imagine it's very mirrored over here with the Indigenous people. Absolutely. So was when we were just talking about the biggest barriers seen for Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people, have you seen any meaningful progress since the release of the National Inquiry's final report back in 2019? Obviously, we've had a pandemic since then, but since the pandemic as well, have you seen any, what would you think is meaningful progress?
So I'm not sure if I can answer this, if I am the right person to answer this, because I am not Indigenous to, you know, really say how much progress or not have been happening. But what I have understand or what I have heard from elders and indigenous, you know, advocates and leaders and students and activists and also colleagues, right, is, I mean, there has been some progress in the awareness of what had happened, what is happening, but very small small actions, right? Like very little actions. And I think that the vast majority of the inquiry, like, you know, the calls for justice and the actions have not been fulfilled. But again, as I say, like, I feel that it's not my place to say much, but that is what I have been, you know, hearing. And then change, as remember we were talking, like, oh, we talk over and over and over again about this. And because I go to that memorial, when I go to that memorial on February 14, I listen again the same. I am like, what is up? Like, it really is really painful, right? Like, just to listen again, over and over and again. But at the same time, I ask myself, okay, what else can I continue doing as an individual? Because I know there are some structural changes that maybe I won't have the superpower to change them as a non-Indigenous person, but just learning more about the land, learning that, for example, Indigenous people are not a thing of a history, right? That had happened in the past. They still exist here. They are still alive. They still resist. They still create. Learning a little bit more about, you know, the art, the music, the celebrations that they put to come together. I think that that's also important because we sometimes I think if we only focus and think that Indigenous folks are only impacted by this, we are kind of removing the rest of their humanity and their fullness, right? Because they have other beautiful things as any human to share and offer. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Considering that you are working a lot with youth at a university, how are you witnessing Indigenous youth kind of leading a change in this area?
We have like FNSA MISA, I think, is one of the student-led organizations at SFSS. And I mean, Indigenous youth are such a powerful voices for justice. I think that together with their elders, they have led the movement, and they organize events, they create in art, they are really good at pushing policy, and, you know, the reclamation of cultural identity has come because of elders, of course, the ones that we still, they're still alive and still survive, like, terrible school methods and things that happen here in Canada, residential schools. But then also young people are kind of like working along with the elders to revive those cultural celebrations that for years were banned in this country. And it's interesting because recently I learned that it was not like even 100 years ago. It was very recent. It was all like a 50 or 40 years ago, many of those celebrations they couldn't attend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And looking towards, obviously, this event, tabling is happening on May 5th. What message would you like to share with someone who will be attending their first Red Dress Day tabling?
Yeah, so I will invite them to come with an open heart, first of all. Like, if they are unsure, maybe I don't know what to bring to the table, don't bring anything to the table. Bring your heart, bring yourself. Chat with us. If you feel that maybe you wanted to make a pin and then you can wanted to carry it with you, or if you wanted to color in a page, or maybe talk with the person that is next to you, just be present, respectful, and ready to learn more. And then maybe you will be inclined to take one of the flowers and bring it back to your closest park in your home and leave it there. This is not only about grief, I will say, but it's about standing together for change, to be together in this for something that we need for a long time, that is change, and not put all the weight on Indigenous people to educate us. We need to do the work. We need to do the work, right? May 5th is a really heavy day for many students, staff, families. So this event is mostly for non-Indigenous folks to come and learn more, because the Indigenous Student Center is already hosting some activities with elders, caring as activities to be in togetherness. And it is for the rest of us to come and learn. And don't come scared, like just come open. Like when open, okay, let me learn something new. And then maybe that will bring you to something bigger, right? Like for example, I invite people to visit our website. Let me see, because sometimes I forget the URL of our website, but because we have created kind of like a page where we have more information about the memorial. And then, so I invite you to check that page, which is sfu.ca/sexual-violence-redress-day, May 5th. You can find it in the tab under education and prevention. And then you can learn more of other ways that you can participate in case that you cannot come to the table, right? So you can maybe hang a red dress in your window, in your home, right? Maybe you can use a pin. Maybe you can attend any other Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women to Spirit People Awareness event in the city, in your neighborhood. Maybe you can read the final report of the inquiry, right? Or maybe you can donate to initiatives that support Indigenous women in our community, like the Downtown Isai Women's Center, the Native Women Association in Canada, or the Aboriginal Mother Center Society. And I invite you just to go and visit this site, because we also post a video clip of an artist that I really like and I follow, who is JB, the First Lady. And then you can maybe also discover new artists, music that you never thought that exists, that also talks about these issues, but is some genre that you like. So then making those connections, right? So that is what I would say to a person that comes from the first time. Sorry, I extend myself too long.
No, absolutely. That is okay. On that note of what message you want to share with people that are attending it for the first time, is there anything else that you'd like people to reflect on as they leave the memorial, but also after this episode, as what would you like people to reflect on from our discussion as well?
Yeah, so then I think that, as I mentioned it before, like if they come to the table, I invite them to take a moment to reflect on what actions they would like to take as a active change maker in the community to help end this epidemic, and also like what can I do to support justice? What can I do to support healing, and that Indigenous rights continue being their rights every day in my actions? How can I connect with the land? How can I connect with Indigenous students in a different way? What else can I learn? So I will say that it is kind of like putting a seed of curiosity and learn more about it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And as of our discussion, is there a specific point that you would like whoever is listening to take away from this and to reflect on?
Yeah, so I would say when we were talking, what was giving me hope, right? Like when we were talking about the previous conversation on intimate partner violence, like please know that our office is here for you, right? That we are here to listen, to support, to guide you, to refer you. That there are different community organizations and then spaces here on campus that are open and ready to support you and to guide you. And then everything is interconnected, So what happened to other communities will happen to my community one day, or if not, is already happening. So this is not an issue of us and them. This is about all of us. So then the reflection is like, this not only happened to certain people in the population, this could happen to all of us in different ways.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's an important part in so many different issues that affect so many different communities, is that it's not just it's a their problem, and it's a very divided issue. It's all about unity and solidarity, and that it affects everyone
exactly.
in different ways. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I've really enjoyed our discussion, and I hope it encourages a lot of people to go to the tabling and to think about the murdered, missing, and Indigenous Two-Spirit women and girls, but also about how you may not know someone, but like you may know someone that they haven't told you that they may be going through something like this, and that it's important to be supportive and to help them seek help if they can't do it on their own either.
Yeah, exactly. And if that happens to you, you know that if you want guidance, if you want to learn more how to support someone who is going through this in silence, we are here also to guide you and support you at the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. If a peer comes and share with you that this is happening to them, we are also here to guide you and support you in how you can offer support to that person. Yeah, so thank you so much, Rebecca, for inviting us, and have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. So that was my interview with Paola from the SBSPO regarding intimate partner violence and the Redress Awareness Table and Memorial event that they have going on May 5th from 12 to 2 p.m. It will be at Burnaby Student Union Building in the reception area on the Surrey campus in the mezzanine, and on the Vancouver campus in the Harbour Centre lobby. And I just want to thank Paola again for having that discussion with me. I think it's a very prevalent issue that is needing to be talked about more. We're seeing intimate partner violence rising in Canada. We're seeing it, gender-based violence rising all across the globe. And as it is being classed in many provinces an epidemic, it is definitely something that needs to be spoken about more. So stay tuned, as we have Democracy Now! Coming up from 11 a.m. and tune in again next Wednesday at 10 to 11 for another Intravenous episode.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday. Though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday. From 3 to 4 p.m. Your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
sozinhas não resolvem cicatrizes. Acontece que cantar nos faz.
Hi, I'm